the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. And recording on a Tuesday night, episode 529, is co-host Seth Cox from AvengeTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, covering, of course. And we're in a weird time right now because there hasn't been any news with the card. Well, actually, there is one piece of news that we're going to talk about. But this is, we're not going to dive too deep into things. We're going to start piecemealing a little draft stuff because we are in April. We're about 3.5 weeks away from the NFL draft. But nothing's happening. There's no trades. I will say this. Mock draft season is in full force. And I will say, you remember that little snide comment I made last week about when we were talking about the mock drafts? And I'm just like, hey, well, you know, what if the Chargers drafted J.J. McCarthy and traded Justin Herbert? I put together a mock draft like that. I know it was a completely irresponsible one, but I wrote it full out. But y'all have to understand, mock drafts for us are scenarios. They're not predictions for the most part until we get to the end. Because we don't, you know, I don't have ears inside organizations throughout the NFL. That's guys like Daniel Jeremiah and that Mel Kiper. All those guys have feelers and hear things. We're just playing out scenarios that would be crazy. And so I wrote one over the weekend, but the basis was, hey, Jim Harbaugh already said that he would select J.J. McCarthy first overall. And I'm like, well, they have the number 5 pick. What if he wanted J.J. McCarthy? And so I based on everything and, you know, I have them trading Justin Herbert to the Vikings. Now, I understand. I completely ignored the insane cap implications for the Chargers. That wouldn't work. They'd be in cap hell. They'd take on like $89 million. They would take like a negative $89 million cap hit with the trade. But that wasn't the exercise. And people hated me about it. But I will say this: the half a million views I got, the half a million reads that I got on Sunday alone, oh my gosh, that was worth it. That was almost as crazy, Seth, as one of my colleagues over Cowboys Wire. He did a mock draft, and these are irresponsible. I say they're irresponsible because right now it's just vast speculation, playing scenarios where the Cowboys trade Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb to move around the first round and end up drafting Jaden Daniels with the 5th pick. And that was the only article on the network that did more traffic than mine, than my irresponsible mock draft, and it did 750,000 in one day. Can we just get to the draft?
Yeah, I mean, you just got to write crazy stuff, and people hate read it and then want to yell at you, right?
Like they did. I had someone on Twitter tell me that this guy hoped I lose my wife and kids and my job. I'm like, do you even know who I am? Do you understand? Mock drafts, especially, like, we've been asked on my network to write a mock draft every week. That's not really my thing. Like, I like to do the Cardinals. Do I want to do a full mock draft? But I'll be well prepared for when we do our mock draft show at the end of the month, because I'll run a few scenarios. But my goodness, people. I need to keep Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert's name out of my mouth. Come on, guys. My job is to talk about the NFL. It's okay. Well,
and it's also not that serious, right?
It's not that serious at all. I even said that it was a crazy scenario. If this was, what if Jim Harbaugh wanted to coach J.J. McCarthy again? I know it's not happening, but that's the fun of the internet. So, yeah. On a less light note, what we're talking about in this episode, we will talk draft needs, but the kind of thing that came out, this is the news that we've been waiting for a long time. The Cardinals and their arbitration with Terry McDonough, former team VP, former executive, who quietly disappeared, who went from being a top GM candidate around the NFL to fading away in the distance, and then got made the news a year ago when he filed claims against the Cardinals for wrongful termination, blah, 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 blah. We finally have a ruling, and the headline, and I'll admit I wrote the headline the same way, is that the Cardinals were ruled to pay McDonough $3 million. Funny thing is, that's a win for the Cardinals, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the summary, and I am not a legal scholar, but my friend Justin Higdon is going to law school, so he can kind of explain to me in our terms, basically, what is going on. And by that, I mean not at all, but, you know, I can listen to what he says, and I can read some things from people that are much more intelligent than I am about the law. And I mean, like you said, the biggest takeaway from this thing is that the Cardinals basically did one thing wrong, and it was kind of...
And it was nothing to do with anything that McDonough originally filed.
Right. And it was, and it ended up being a silly is not the right word, but it was a superfluous thing that shouldn't have even happened. But, you know, sometimes billionaires and their egos get in the way of things, and that's basically what happened, right?
Yeah, if we want to kind of run down, so this was the burner phone scheme thing that was brought up. He was seeking roughly $175 million in damages from the Cardinals, saying that he was wrongfully terminated, that when he was uncomfortable with the scenario and brought it up, that he was retaliated against, his work chain, things changed, and things like that. And then he accused the Cardinals of having a hostile work environment, cited a whole bunch of things where Michael Bidwill yelled at people. And we've seen confirmation of these type of things in reports from ESPN, from Kyle Odegaard, that Michael Bidwill isn't a good guy, isn't an easy guy to work with, essentially. And we understand that. Here's the funny thing about all of this. If you recall, that the scheme was this, that kind of the cheating that McDonough alleged. Back in 2018, when Steve Wilks was first hired as his head coach, the one year he was there, general manager Steve Keim, at that point, over the July 4th weekend, was arrested for extreme DUI. He pled guilty. He served his time, and the Cardinals imposed a fine, and I believe it was a six-week suspension, at least a six-week suspension. And this was right during the offseason leading up to training camp and the first part of training camp. And so it was a very inconvenient time. And apparently there was a scheme that involved burner phones so that Steve Wilks and other coaches could reach out to Keim, because during that suspension he was to have zero contact with the team. That was the team-imposed suspension. The league did not do anything because they had felt that the punishment that the team doled out itself was sufficient. McDonough apparently was uncomfortable with the cheating and brought this up to Bidwill and was verbally berated. And that was the kind of the beginning of the end of his time in Arizona, where he went from being like vice president of player personnel to as just a senior executive to back. Because if there was a time that he was the number two guy to Steve Keim. And he got GM interviews with the San Francisco 49ers in 2017. It looked like he was on his way up. And then he quietly disappeared. And we both remember that, because it seemed he was very absent. We saw the title change. Some of the video footage when they would show their executive meetings with Keim and Quentin Harris and Adrian Wilson and Michael Bidwill, and suddenly Terry McDonough wasn't even in the room. But that's where it all stemmed from. And when we talked about this when it happened, when he filed the claim and made it public and all that stuff came out in the news, what did the Cardinals do? Oh, my gosh. they went with the – they scorched earth. We talked – they went scorched earth and brought up publicly how – well, one, that they did come out and say that the burner phones existed, but that the second that Michael Bidwill heard about it, that he put the kibosh on the whole thing. And so – but then beyond that, just complete character assassination of McDonough for issue – like things he had done – within the organization, making players feel uncomfortable or free agent visits uncomfortable, verbally berating other employees for whatever, whatever. Then also alleging contact about lack of paying child support, spousal abuse, child neglect, scorched earth, like all this. You know, the funny thing is that, which we felt was too far. We felt that it was too much. Like, what is this? There was some pettiness going on, almost like we felt that they both had this file on each other, and they were playing chicken. And Bidwill or whoever in the organization told McDonough, don't do it, McDonough, because we've got this. And McDonough said, I don't care. Then the Cardinals just put it out there. And in the end, the arbitrator dismissed everything that was regarded to the employment side of things. And the only thing that the Cardinals had to do was pay $3 million for defamation. And it was simply for their heavy-handed statement that they made about McDonough publicly that was accessed on and open on the Counterpoint website up until recently, so for like a year, because they said all those things when they didn't necessarily have any evidence to it. They were basically, they crossed the line, they did so with malice, and it was clearly malicious, but yeah. And so rather than, you know, changing organization, getting Michael Bidwill fired and the scandal is, and having to pay McDonough, you know, over $100 million, they pay him $3 million, and they accepted that. They say that we respect that they think it was too far. It doesn't look like, it doesn't sound like what the Cardinals said. They regretted it all.
I think they regret having to pay him $3 million, but as you and I discussed off the air, they had kind of planned to pay him his salary for a while anyway. So it was just an interesting situation in that, you know, I think a lot of the times these guys have high opinions of themselves, and then they forget that, you know, nobody in the end really cares about them, unfortunately. And you know, like you said, the Cardinals way overstepped what they did and have to pay for it. But McDonough thought that he had a smoking gun, and in the end he has really nothing. And that's the thing. I mean, that's just how, unfortunately, these situations work out a lot of times. And you know, it's one of those situations where people don't understand termination and like termination law or an employment law. And I don't understand it either at all. So I'm not going to say I understand it, but I can read what smarter people write than me. And the basis of it is that, you know, you don't have to be fired for cause. And so when you get fired and then you're like, oh, I'm being fired because I stood up on the moral high ground of not cheating with burner phones, and the arbitrator goes, okay, that has nothing to do with why you're fired. Like, that's, and even if they say, oh, we're firing him because he disagreed with, you know, us using a burner phone, that's still not illegal. And so even though the idea of it sounds wrong, right? Like, it definitely doesn't sound right. It's not illegal. And so that's what makes this whole thing interesting, is that, you know, if you are anti-Cardinals like Mike Florio, you come out saying, look at the Cardinals, they're a bad organization, and Mike Bidwill is a scumbag, and blah, blah, blah. And if you're a Cardinals fan, you just kind of go, All right. Well, I guess that's over with now, right? Like, can we move on? Like, this was embarrassing. You're embarrassing yourself, dude. Like, don't put other people's business out in the streets, because like you said, at some point your business is going to come up too. And yeah, I mean, this is definitely one of those situations where you're just kind of like, all right, I hope this never happens again. And yeah, if it does, then at that point, you know, maybe the NFL has to do some more investigating of, you know, why do your employees keep trying to get you in trouble, like in bigger trouble, right? Like, and so, yeah, the whole situation, it's over. Thank goodness.
Although there was an interesting tidbit in there just because of what they were finding. This was the wild part. Larry Fitzgerald managed to find himself in the middle of this because McDonough's former father-in-law sent Fitzgerald an unsolicited letter in 2018. It says, and this is from Tisha Thompson at ESPN, in September 2018, Larry Fitzgerald received an unsolicited letter from McDonough's former father-in-law accusing McDonough of abandoning his daughter. Fitzgerald gave the letter to a team executive who did not notify Mr. Bildwell of the allegations and just instead put the letter in Mr. McDonough's employment file and never spoke a word of it to Bidwell until nearly 5 years later, when they used that as some of the evidence for what was said in that scorched earth statement. But oh my gosh, even Larry Fitzgerald was involved with this. Michael Bidwell didn't know about it, but what the heck? It seems like everyone involved is gross. Like McDonough, gross. Bidwell, gross. McDonough's former father-in-law, why? Why would you send something to Larry Fitzgerald?
Right. And it's just, it's just an ego thing, it seems like, a lot of time. And obviously you and I are, we could put our net worths together and still not even understand what these guys are worth. But it just seems like sometimes these guys think that because they have money or, you know, a title or are in the public eye that they're, thoughts matter, and you're just like, no, you're not that important, guys. Like, we don't, you know, the drama that we live for is on Sundays, not on Monday through Saturday.
This is annoying to talk about. This is annoying to talk about,
and especially in the off season, it's like there shouldn't be any conversations about this franchise in a negative light in the off season. And it just seems like the last, you know, 5-6 years, that's all it's been with this franchise is during the off season, it's always negative stuff. And it's like, that's one of the things that you're hoping that Monty and those guys change, right? That they get rid of that being who the Arizona Cardinals are, and instead you start to see a consistent effort to be, you know, mundane. And let's be honest, the Cardinals aren't the only ones that struggle with this. I mean, we're seeing the Super Bowl champs go through a situation where one of their young, what they hope is an up-and-coming star player, is running from the law. I mean, I don't even know how to explain it, right? Like, he is on the lam after being involved in a hit and run. Like, it's just, you know, and it's not just money. And I don't want people to think I'm saying that, but like, money can breed that where people, you know, don't make good decisions because they think they have money or they want to protect the money that they have. And sometimes their better judgment. I mean, Rashee Rice, and not to change the subject from the Cardinals, but just as an example, Rashee Rice, from all indications, has been a great kid up through SMU to obviously his first year in the pros. And it seems like he made a really, really dumb decision, probably out of fear, probably was maybe intoxicated or, you know, doing something he probably shouldn't have been, got in an accident and decided, oh, I should not be at the scene. And it just seems like these guys a lot of times let their ego and things like that get in the way of just, like, think about it from the Cardinals' perspective. You let Terry McDonough burn the bridge, right? Like, just let him do his thing. You respond with a boilerplate. You know, we enjoyed having Terry as a employee for the past X amount of years. We wish him nothing but the best, but it was time for us to go in different directions. And literally, this $170 million lawsuit is worth $0. I mean $0.
Right. The only thing they were dinged on is for the stupid statement they put out.
And so, that again, it comes back to, like, did your ego get in the way of just being like, okay, it's a disgruntled ex, whether it's in life or business, right? Disgruntled ex, don't respond. Just let them have their moment. If the people around you are, you know, the people that you want to surround yourself with, they should believe you and that know who you are as a person, so you shouldn't have anything to worry about. And it just seemed like he couldn't help himself, and he had to get a statement out there to counter what was going on. And it's just like, man, this could have just been over and done with, but you had to butt in.
The one thing that we have to wait on, and we'll I'll ask you what you think will end up happening, is that one thing that was stated in the judgment was that the burner phones were said to have been used. The arbitrator, Jeffrey Mishkin, found that there were burner phones in use. And the question is, will the league come in and impose some sort of penalty? Now, it's going to be tricky, and I'm going to give you a list of people are like, well, or they should lose some draft picks. The history suggests that might not happen based on what we're seeing. One, there's never been anything like this before. And two, this is now a he said, he said situation. McDonough said, hey, we had these burner phones. I brought it up, and it was Bidwell's plan. The Cardinals are saying, yeah, we heard about when Bidwell found out about the burner phones, he's like, no, stop that. Because it was during his suspension, it was, it was impermissible. But if we're going to look at and I found a list, I mean, good old Wikipedia. It doesn't include the most recent one. When have the teams been docked draft picks? And dating back to 1980, they all have to, almost all of, like, the vast majority of them were salary cap things, for violation of the salary cap, which is one of the things that happened to the 49ers recently. A couple years ago, they did some incorrect reporting of player benefits, but it wouldn't have put them over the cap. And so they lose a pick next year, and one of their picks gets moved to after the comp picks in, like, the fourth round. But if we go to 1980, there was an illegal tryout, and in 1980, the Raiders exceeded the player limit. Contract violations, illegally sequestering players in 70, I don't know about that, illegal use of injured reserve, tampering, salary cap. Then, of course, the famous one, videotaping, the videotaping stuff by the Patriots, tampering, bounties, the Cardinals were involved with that because, well, those victims, tampering, the deflated footballs, tampering, artificial noise into the stadium by the Falcons, which is now legal. deflating football. Okay, that came. There was the second year in a row for that. Off-season workout policies. So that's a work environment tampering. The Patriots for videotaping again. Salary cap, COVID protocols, tampering, salary cap. So yeah, and so. You look at the times that teams have been docked draft picks. And then the Cardinals, they didn't lose a draft pick, but they settled their tampering with Jonathan Gannon with a deal with the Eagles.
Isn't it ironic, too, that now the Eagles are being investigated for tampering?
Hey, they figured, you know, the Cardinals, it worked out for the Cardinals. I don't know. But what do you think? I feel doubtful that the league will end up coming and do anything. One, they have a tendency to protect their owners. But two, like, if you look at the speculation, it would only be a true violation if it was known about and carried out when by the team's account they were obtained, and then it was immediately, and maybe there was, I'm sure there's some smoking gun that shows that there was contact with Kine, but that once the owner found out, said, no, that's it. Nope. That's not happening. And if that's the case, why would the league come down and do that? I feel doubtful that there will be any such, maybe a fine, but I don't think they're going to lose draft capital.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't see any way that there is, but you know, never say never type stuff, right? Maybe they'll lose a seventh round pick for us, Jess.
Oh, dang. Lose a seventh round pick. No, what would actually be worse?
If they get, yeah.
They move that seventh round pick to the back of the round.
I know. That's our
don't
luck.
Do Roger Goodell. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. Please. Anyway, coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web, something better. We'll talk about the draft. But we're going to talk draft over the next few shows. But what are the Cardinals' biggest needs and secondary needs as we look at the draft coming up in this month? That's coming up next on the Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Now talking NFL draft. The Cardinals have 11 selections in the 2024 draft, pending any deals that could or could not happen. They've got 2 picks in the first round, 6 picks between day 1 and day 2, and then another 5 on day 3. We've talked about what we should do in free agency. They've made moves in free agency. As we enter the draft, let's talk primary needs and then talk secondary needs, because the truth is, right, almost with any position, you can go, yeah, we need more of those guys, and so you could do that. But let's talk, if we're thinking day 1, day 2 pick, or even like round 1, round 2, well, they could do day 1, day 2. So they're 6, they've got the 6 picks in the top 100, the top 90. What do you feel are their critical needs that they should address, that they're like, we got to take care of early in the draft?
I think for me, the biggest one is there's really 3, but I mean, you can rank these in any order you want, and that would be wide receiver, corner, and edge. I think those are the critical needs that you would like to see get addressed, ideally in those first 71 picks. So they have 5 picks in the top 71. Like you said, 6 in the top 100 or top 90, technically. You'd like to see them address a pass rusher, obviously a wide receiver and a corner in those picks. Guys that can, maybe not starters per se, but guys that can make impact. And then obviously whoever you pick in the top, you know, whether it's at 4 or 6 or 8 or 11 or 12, wherever the pick is, that's the other, you know, those guys have to start. But you getting high level reps from, if so, you know, whether it's again 23, 27, whatever that ends up being their next pick in the first round, they need to get a starter and
an immediate contributor.
Right, and a very involved contributor, if you will.
Yeah, for me, the critical needs come down to 2, and that's receiver and edge. Although we'll have to wait and see on the edge, just because, you know.
Well, and that's the hard part, because I think you and I and you know, the guys that aren't there, we definitely see it as a need. But we've said it a number of times, and, you know, nobody's going to listen to us until it actually happens, obviously. But it seems like they are not unsatisfied with their edges, right?
I mean, you got B.J. Ojulari, and okay, you believe in him. They even, one of the new signings, I think it was Justin Jones, mentioned B.J. as a guy that's promising. And we'll say this, this organization, this coaching staff believes in Zaven Collins. I don't know if they'll commit to the fifth-year option. They believe that he can be a premium edge guy. And we didn't see it. I mean, we saw him doing decent at the position, but receiver's a must, though. I mean, you can't look at that receiver room and be satisfied. Like, that's gross. Yeah. So you need a big time receiver. Now obviously the easy one, take Harrison and you've got that, or take Neighbors and you're set. You know, it doesn't have to be that, but if you're not going to take the sure thing at four, then you better hit at 27 or 35. Like, maybe, you know, a Keon Coleman or an A.D. Mitchell are guys that will be alphas in that room, and you'll be just fine. But if you're not going to go with what are the consensus sure things of Harrison, Neighbors, and Odunze, then you better be right on. Because there are just absolute studs at receiver, and there's some guy that, and especially what they need, because they need the alpha, they need that guy in the room, and I don't think Michael Wilson is it, Greg Dortch isn't it. Those are good, you know, complementary players, but you need an alpha, and the Cardinals do not, and Trey McBride can't be your alpha because he's not technically a receiver, and so he's not going to be in that room, and so yeah, receiver, edge. And I do say cornerback too. I feel maybe it's not critical because of the youth that they have, and maybe they really believe, like, Sean Murphy Bunton, good. I feel good about him. Garrett Williams, you got to feel good about. And depending on how the coaches feel, that young group of Keytrell Clark, Devaud Wilson, and Starling Thomas, I don't know. But yeah, I would say that's nearly, it's a receiver and edge critical, and then cornerback high, but it's still primary. It's still a primary need, and I would prefer to see all three of those addressed within the first five picks, right? That would make sense.
Yeah, and that's the thought process, but, I mean, you don't – when it all comes out, that's the hard part, right? Like, you really never know what's going to come down or what's going to happen. So you plan and you look, and like you said, you kind of try and mock or, you know, play out scenarios. But at the end of the day, you know, when you pick fourth or like you said, 27th, or, you know, again, if you trade back, if you say, go from four to wherever, 11, that's the rumor, right? With the
Vikings,
with the Minnesota Vikings, you don't control anything at that point. Like, we kind of talked about that the other day. Like, there's just, you have no say in what happens before you. So you can say, like, there's no way that all these guys are going to go, but we have no idea. I mean,
we saw it before with quarterbacks in 2017.
Right. And, right, and it was the same thing, right? There's no way that Pat and Deshaun are going to go, we'll sit Pat, we're fine, no big deal, right? And no, oh, there they go, and you're like, oh, no. And so, you know, you look at it and you try to figure it out, but at the end of the day, it is still a crapshoot, and unless you have the pick, you can't predict what's going to happen in front of you. And so, you know, for the Cardinals, it's like, it's a gamble, like you said, because even even if you go, let's say they move down to 11, right? And you're like, we're not going to take a wide receiver at 11. We don't like anybody, you know, because the big three are on the board. But we really like people at 23. It's like, but do you like one person that you've had available at 23 in your scenarios, or do you like five receivers the same? In which case you probably have a shot, right? Probably, but it's not for sure. So unless you're sitting at 23 and then there's five receivers that have the exact same grade and you go, but there's one corner that we really, or, you know, one edge that we really like that is available at 23. So we'll just take whatever wide receiver at 27. It doesn't, whichever one's there, we'll take them. And so like you can do it in that way, but at the end of the day, you know, we're going to get the boilerplate, you know,
they were this, the top of our
board. They were at the top of our board. You know, we got four players in our top 10 or whatever they always say. But the reality is that they miss out on guys all the time. And you know, you can go back, like we said, they missed out on Mahomes and Watson. You know, they missed out on Josh Allen. Was that the same year, too?
That was the next year.
Yeah, they missed out on Josh Allen. They thought that he wouldn't go there, you know, and so then they made the move for Josh Rosen. When was it? What year was it that they, there was a guy they wanted. Oh, Shane Ray. They wanted Shane Ray, and the Broncos, I think the Broncos traded in front of them too to draft Shane Ray. Now he was a bust. So, you know, sometimes it works out when a team takes the guy you want.
Well, yeah, they've had that a few times. They wanted Amir Abdullah.
Right.
They ended up with David Johnson. They had in the quarterback situation, they wanted Trevor Siemian. they've had three or four times when teams leapfrogged them for quarterbacks that they kind of had their eyes on.
Yeah, and so that's just the thing, is like we run these scenarios, we feel confident, you know, we being Jess and I, that if you move back to 11, that you're going to be able to get, you know, one of these guys, right? You'll be able to get a guy like Brian Thomas or, you know, whoever the next set of wide receivers are. But the reality is you can't guarantee anything. And the reality also is that you could be sitting there and Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze falls in your lap, right? That you look at the teams in front of them and
it's going to happen. Like something's going to happen because every year stuff happens and you're like, wait, what? Whether it's Laremy Tunsil in a video and it causes him to tumble, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, whether it's Bijan Robinson going into the top 10, whether it's the Lions jumping up for Jahmyr Gibbs. Like things just happen, or the Lions jumping up to get Jameson Williams as high as he was, despite Tarrant coming off an ACL. Things happen literally every year that don't make sense, and we can never predict. Like, it feels like a lock that there'll be three quarterbacks picked in the top three. Would I be at all surprised if something changes and it's not? And like, I am fully prepared for the Patriots to trade out and target Bo Nix or Michael Penix later.
Right.
That would be a very Patriots thing to do. And then Harrison comes off the board, or maybe McCarthy goes in it, right? And Drake May's the one that falls. Who knows? I don't know. I'm fully prepared for it. But yeah.
Well, and you think about it. I mean, it's all, you know, everybody's always very, you know, this guy's the best guy, this guy, you know, and a lot of the times it just ends up being the teams that are patient. We joke about it all the time, but like, you know, the Cowboys just sat there and let teams take good players. You know, Jalen Waddle's a nice player. JC Horn's been, you know, dealt with some injuries, but he's a decent player. You know, Justin Fields obviously flamed out in Chicago, and the Dallas just sat there and they're like, okay, we'll take Micah Parsons. Like, whatever. Like, we'll take the best player in the draft. Like, and so that's what happens a lot of times, right? Is the good teams just sit there. You know, we talk about it. I mean, the team that gets it all the time or everybody complains about is always the Ravens, right? Like, how do they end up with Kyle Hamilton, who's now an All-Pro? Well, because you got, like you said, you got teams that are trading up for Jameson Williams at 12. You know, you got teams taking Evan Neal at 7 when he's a 400-pounder that can't move, right? Like, you get those things. And then so then a guy like Kyle Hamilton just sits there and you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll just take the best player in the draft if that's what I'm going to do. And it's just crazy to me because it happens every year. You know, good players end up falling and you know, bad players end up going higher. And then all of a sudden we're sitting here having this conversation because the teams that draft and develop poorly are back at the top, right? I mean, think about,
like the Cardinals.
You know, right, like the Cardinals, and they're the easy one, but think, and I know this team's kind of easy too, but think about the Los Angeles Raiders, right? Like, or Las Vegas Raiders, sorry.
And wow, Seth, do you even remember the Raiders in LA?
I know.
I do. I remember the LA Raiders.
Right. But like, think about them. They, you know, they just took Tyree Wilson because they needed a pass rusher desperately. Because 2 years ago, or no, 3 years ago, they took Cleveland Farrell, you know, fourth overall. You know, that things like that, right? Cleveland Farrell goes fourth overall. And this is, again, this is why I always caution the whole, like, oh, just, you know, get 3 first-round picks. Well, the Raiders had 3 first-round picks that year, and they took Cleveland Farrell, Josh Jacobs, who's a good running back, and Jonathan Abram. So, it's not like...
They just end up being expensive misses.
Right. Well, and then what happens is what we talked about. Oh, we need to go get Chandler Jones because Cleveland Farrell didn't work out, right? The Henry Ruggs situation, completely different, right? Like, that's just a guy that's a moron and did something terrible, but like in the same draft, again, they had 2 first round picks. They took Damon Arnett. Like, that dude's out of the league. He's a first round pick, 19 overall. He's literally out of the league. So it's not as simple as just like, oh, if you have, you know, you trade back and you get the guy, and you're like, no, because if you miss on that pick, or you then reach because, you know, you passed on the guys like, you know, CeeDee Lamb and those. Remember, the Eagles took Jalen Reagor instead of Justin Jefferson, like literally one pick before him. It's not easy. If it was easy, then everybody would be good all the time. And so you just have to understand that you have to be convicted, and you have to have a good foundation for the player to come into, and you know, you do have to get lucky.
Other positions of note for me, these are alert positions but aren't critical, because they have players in place but they could be upgraded. And so you look at interior line, like guard, center. You look at linebacker off the ball. And I think those are the two areas there. And then guys to develop, guys you want to, like, you don't necessarily want to go premium, so because then they won't play. But if you could find day 3 or late round 3 and day 3 players that can maybe develop into something, tackle, running back, defensive line, and safety.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, the big thing with that is you know, like you said, running back and safety, especially, you want to have those in house. You know, we talk about the good teams, right? What makes Baltimore great and contenders every year?
Back.
Right. And, but they're also always ready. Like, you know, you look at it, they've just lost a guy in Geno Stone, who I think
he was really like a good. Year,
yeah, led the NFL in interceptions
like 2 years ago.
Yeah, and now they're just like, all right, good luck, Geno. Like, have fun getting paid a lot of money because we've got all these guys already in place. Like, we don't need you, and it's not that he's bad by any means. It's like, oh, we've already got our guys in place. You know, they drafted Kyle Hamilton. Like I said earlier, he didn't play a whole bunch as a rookie. He had some reps. He, you know, he wasn't a guy that was, you know, a day one starter by any means. And what did they do? They just developed him and got him ready. And then when it was time to let somebody go, they're like, hey, I mean, that's what they do. They just get guys and then develop them. And then, I mean, think about Justin Matabuke, right? He's a guy that was a third round pick, didn't play much. And now he was, you know, ninth in the defensive player of the year voting, had 13 sacks, eight all pro. Like, he's slowly developed, and he was a day three pick, just like you're talking about, Jess. Like, that's an interior defensive lineman. You didn't need him in year one. He got better and developed into a monster by year four. That's what you want with those day, you know, late day two, early day three picks. If you get more than that, obviously it's just luck has a lot to do with it. You know, I don't want to take anything away from people, but, you know, like, you look at it, guys like Alex Highsmith, right, that the Steelers drafted. He was drafted 102. You know why he's good? Because he went to a program that could take their time, develop him. He only had to play five games as a rookie, or, you know, start five games as a rookie. So then he developed and became a guy that had six sacks, then 14 and a half sacks, you know, made a Pro Bowl. Like, those, when was the last time we talked about the Cardinals doing that? with outside the top 100 picks. It just doesn't happen.
Right. Like, you could say probably the best example of that was Buda Baker, because when they drafted him, they had the safeties, and he filled in as a rookie, and that he was a special team special. He was a Pro Bowl special teams player as a rookie, but it was about halfway through the year when Tyvon Branch got hurt that he stepped in and then played really well. But, yeah, like, it's not happening. Like, we had it happen a long time ago. So,
right,
Bobby Massey became a starter. Like, you look at other guys. Yeah, it just doesn't happen. Like, Calais Campbell.
Right. Calais is the perfect example. Like you said, like, guys like Buda, guys like Calais, those are.
But those were pretty, those were not day three picks.
No, but I mean, Calais was a third rounder, I believe, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
And so that's the thing, is like you said, you don't have to be that good. Like, obviously that's probably a little over the top. I mean, oh, and Calais was a top 50 pick, so maybe he wasn't a great example, but, you
know. That's right. He was second. No, I was Darnell Dockett was third round. It was,
yeah. And so you don't, but I mean, Darnell and Carlos Dansby are great examples, right? Like, those were guys, and those changed the foundation of the franchise more than anything. You know, you had Darnell's as his 64th pick, and he came in and earned his spot and then developed into a Pro Bowl player, right? And, you know, he wasn't very good his rookie season. He started all the time, but he wasn't very good. And it wasn't until year four that he broke out. And then the Cardinals, you know, signed him to a long-term deal and things like that. And you look at it, that's what it should be.
I've got one guy, Rashad Johnson.
Yes,
it's been a long time.
No, and
Rashad Johnson was that guy.
And that's exactly it. That's the problem, man. It's been a long time. And when you get that and you don't develop those guys and you don't get anything out of them, it becomes really hard to have success. And that's why the Cardinals have struggled to find continued success since that time. Because, I mean, you mentioned it, Rashad Johnson, 95th pick. That's a great, great pick. That's a guy that was integral to your defense, ended up playing for a while. Really good. You know who was a good one, and he never developed as the receiver that you would want, but was fantastic? Andre Roberts, right?
Oh, like, yeah.
And developed into one of the best return men in the NFL, made an all-pro team, a pro bowler, late third-round pick. Like, that's a great pick. Yeah, it didn't work out for the Cardinals because they were just like, oh, you're not turning into the receiver. And that's the Ken Wisenhunt era, obviously. And then to the Arians era, but it's like, oh, you didn't turn into the receiver we need, you're not good, as opposed to being like, oh no, this is a guy that, you know, can be utilized in different ways. But the problem is when you, like you said, you get Bobby Massey, you get and Justin Bethel in one draft, but Michael Floyd, you know, becomes an alcoholic, and Jamel Fleming doesn't even make it. It looks really bad because Bobby Massey, you know, is your best player. Probably Justin Bethel's your best player out of that draft, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where the problem comes. And it's the same thing, you know, you mentioned Tyrann Mathieu. Tyrann Mathieu, we've talked about before. He fell, obviously, because of the off-the-field stuff. But you get Tyrann Mathieu in the third round, that should be a great draft. That should be a foundational draft. And instead you had Kevin Minter, who never really developed into the guy you were looking for, and Jonathan Cooper, who couldn't play. You know, and so you look at it and you go, what went wrong? Oh, that's what went wrong, is that the first two guys you took didn't even measure up with the third guy. And so that's been the Cardinals' problem. They'll hit on their first rounders and then get nothing out of day two and three guys, or they find a gem on day two and get nothing out of their first rounders. It's like, hey, can't we just do like a full draft one time, please?
That's the hope. That's the hope. And so, yeah, that kind of covers what we're going to talk about tonight. We've got the critical needs, receiver, edge, corner, and then you could go the guys that you want to have ready. They don't have to be deep. Like, yeah, other positions, tackle, they seem okay, but the interior line, running back, you can never really have enough of those.
And corners and safeties, yeah, are the same. And you need guys.
They just loaded up on 2-3 year deals on the defensive line, but that doesn't mean having a rotational day three guy. Like Dante Stills, if Dante Stills is able to do this year what he did last year, but playing rather than like half the snaps, playing less than that, hey, if he's their fourth or fifth best guy, you feel really good. And then if he is better, great. But he doesn't have, like, you're not counting on a sixth round pick to start this year.
Right, exactly.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Secret Podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk Live. It's episode 529. As of right now, I think Seth will probably wait till next week unless something comes up. I think I'm going to try and bring on Howard Balzer for an episode, maybe throw on a couple. We got some more draft stuff to do. We've talked a lot of draft already, but we'll delve more into that in the weeks to come. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is Rise of Secret Podcast. Thanks for listening, as always. Maybe we'll be back in a couple days. Otherwise, it'll be next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, Be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.